Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for December the 10th, 2017. This is our weekly look inside that crazy world of politics and policy from City Hall and the Chicago Board of Education to Springfield and beyond. So grab that Sunday paper, go get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get this week off to a great start. Well, Schwani, you got the Christmas shopping done yet?
Let's see. Good morning, Rick.
Yeah.
I finally started. I actually did get a little bit of a start yesterday, but just a little. I think Thursday.
You mean little presents, though.
Yeah.
So you went to Walgreens.
No, I didn't go to Walgreens.
You got the trial size
that'll
packages.
That'll be tomorrow. But I actually did make a little bit of headway. It dawned on me late last week. Wow, Christmas is 2 weeks from Monday. How about that?
I know.
So I need to get moving on a lot of stuff.
I've been doing the online thing.
Yeah, well, I will do some of that. I will do some of that, but I like to go to a couple of small business places that sell some nice things that are make good gifts for the holidays and make good gifts for Christmas. So kind of avoid the crowd in that regard.
Tchotchke type stuff.
Yeah, right, right. So it works.
And individualized. It's
very
nice.
You know what the person... would like in terms of a gift and what they would prefer, and so you can kind of put it toward that end.
Yeah, and truly, like, Billy Goats doesn't have a wide selection on things, you know?
Yeah, last year I got a shirt from you. The year before I got a calendar from you, I think.
Billy Goat. Okay. I got a hat.
Yeah.
I'll take a burger.
You didn't get the hat yet?
Sam? I didn't get the hat.
No.
Okay,
no.
Well,
the egg sandwich.
I'm not a hat guy, though. Yeah, just stuff an egg sandwich inside
a hat. That's what I want.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not open when we, they just open.
Well, you have a key? You don't have a key down there yet?
Well, and now they're going to be, doing a little bit of repair work down there.
You're
going to
be directing traffic down there. I can see you standing out there. No.
Well, no,
If I
get you the egg sandwich or a gift certificate for an egg sandwich, you won't be able to get it there until they reopen after.
When is the, from what point to what point are they going to be closed?
It's sometime after the first of the year, but I'm not sure what the duration will be. Because I think once they start, they're doing some infrastructure work. Some people were like, oh, they're remodeling. They're going to take down all the stuff off the walls. No, they're not going to do that.
No.
But but they're going to do some, like plumbing and that kind of thing. And, they don't anticipate it's going to take a long time. But you start digging in around there. You might find Jimmy Hoffa.
Is this a city project?
No.
Okay.
No, it's...
It's a facelift.
Not really. It's an infrastructure repair. A facelift would mean that they were going to take stuff off the wall.
So we're not going to see an LED sign for Billy Goat.
I wouldn't touch anything near those curtains.
That's for sure. Boy, you got that right.
I remember one time I was doing something. It was like an interview for CLTV, and the videographer came down there and he brought some lights to set up, and he plugged them into an outlet. And I swear I heard crackling. And I said, yep, that's the aluminum in the insulation with the newspapers
throw a circuit breaker. They blew a fuse.
Yeah, I said, unplug that thing now, man. This could start something. But, so you won't take a hat, you'll take an egg sandwich. That's
make
fair.
It two.
All right, two egg sandwiches. I'll have steak, egg, and grilled onions. How about that?
They've got that burger. I didn't realize they had it after the World Series. They call it the Curse Breaker.
That was actually from a burger competition.
Oh, okay. So that wasn't actually after the World Series then.
Well, they named it that as a result of the Cubs winning. But
it's got bacon, jalapenos,
right, and. It was voted a fan favorite at a burger competition. And so they decided that they would feature that on the regular menu as well. I have not tried it.
I'm going to try it next time I'm down there.
Today.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll make it down there at some point.
Well, we'll keep you updated on their status, okay, as far as opening and reopening and those kinds of things. And who knows, we might reopen the place with the show there.
That would be awesome.
I'd love
to do it.
That's a fair idea.
I'd love to do it. It is a fair idea, as long as we don't plug anything into the wall down. We'll run a separate power cord from Tribune Tower.
Exactly, right.
On Lower Michigan, running through from the tower to along Lower Michigan and into the place.
Well, we don't have to worry about too much traffic on Lower Michigan at that time.
Not at this hour, no.
That's for sure.
Although I have seen it, you know, coming to work early on Sunday mornings, as we do, you know, if in the summertime, if there's a lot going on downtown.
Oh, when you've got the traffic. When you've got, like, you know, every other week when they close the streets for a parade or some kind of thing going, you tend to see the traffic diverted off.
Yeah, but not only that, you know, it's just people that have been out all night, and they're still out all night.
Yeah, I think there was some kind of a Christmas pub crawl yesterday, that big pub crawl that went on, and I was curious whether I'd run into any of the leftover patrons of that coming in this morning.
Coming in today, right.
Kind of like
right.
The post St. Patrick's Day type celebrations, where you tend to find some stragglers still downtown or on Lower Michigan, and they can't figure out their way back to Upper Michigan Avenue.
And there's no elevator.
No, there is not. It's kind of like if you found your way down here, you belong here, kind of thing.
There's a circuitous route that you can take up to Michigan from there.
There is.
You don't want to take the stairs. You can do it. It'll take a while, though.
Well, I mean, you can do, well, I would say Kinsey or even State Street.
Right, exactly, yeah.
It takes a couple of blocks
I'm saying it's circuitous. There, I got the word out correctly.
See, I didn't understand what you were saying the first time.
Well, I said my goodbyes and
I was going
farewell
to say,
wishes
yes.
to our friends at the Chicago Brauhaus this past week. Tomorrow is the last day.
And
52 years in Lincoln Square.
Raised a toast to them. You thankfully sent me a picture.
Prost.
Say that again.
Frohe Weihnachten. Merry Christmas.
Very good.
Vielen Dank, Günther und Harry. Many thanks.
Wow. You should do some recording, German recordings.
God bless you, Schwani.
Gesundheit.
Gesundheit.
I'm very impressed.
Oh, that's about all I know. But Frohe Weihnachten is the way you say Merry Christmas or Season's Greetings in German.
Mm-hmm.
And Vielen Dank means thank you very much, not just Dankeschön, which is thanks. And so that's what we shout out to the good folks there at the Brauhaus for all they've done.
Yeah, especially because we just went through the rumors about...
Yeah, in the spring.
And that got debunked.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, kaboom.
Right.
In just the premature rumors, I guess, it would say.
A little bit premature, right.
But
fair warning for anyone who might want to go up there these last 2 days, it's going to be busy. So keep that in mind. When you're up there,
what a great place, what an institution,
yeah.
And it will be missed.
It will be. It will be. People are also speculating as to what might go in there. You know, there's no idea. It's a big space.
Right.
You can't just let that space sit, especially in a neighborhood as thriving as Lincoln Square. So it will be interesting to see what goes in there here in the near future. We'll see what the new year holds.
Well, that's change, right? Everything.
The only thing that is constant is change.
You need your own show, Dave. just to sound out all of these. And next year will be a big year of change.
Yes, it will.
In many ways.
including the radio station.
Yes, and the newspaper.
Right.
And Tribune Tower.
When are the dates for you folks to move over to Prudential?
Oh, we just know it's second quarter.
Second quarter.
Yes.
Okay. I think it is more or less for us, too.
So I was concerned because I had heard rumors of it being earlier, and there's this little thing going on in March 20th here in Illinois that I thought...
Gee, what might that be?
Yeah, so right in the middle of the primary election, it's like, okay, pack your things and get out.
You could do that in a day and a half, can't you?
Well, you've seen my desk.
Yeah? Well, no, I haven't, actually.
Well, I haven't either. I haven't seen it since 1998, I think.
There's a 20-year anniversary coming up.
Indeed. So that would be probably time to start moving things out there, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
For another 20 years, where you won't see it in the new quarters.
And very curious what that's going to look like over at Prudential.
You haven't been over there?
No, I have not. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure. I mean, they were talking like open floor plan.
Oh, it would be like the fourth floor, the whole open area?
Not even cubicles.
You wouldn't even have any cubicles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know me. I don't thrive well in an open floor plan.
No. You want your own space. You want your privacy.
Well, you know, there's a reason why they kind of have stuck me in the back in the office there.
So you wouldn't be bothered?
So I wouldn't be bothered. Correct.
Good. They were looking out for you.
Yes. Well, actually, it's so no one else would be bothered by me is really what it was.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a... great show coming up. Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Sam Luton has the
Todd,
latest scores.
Morgan.
good morning. Producer Casera is here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200, which is also our text, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is here with us this morning trying to get a feel for this crazy show. And remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNradio.com, and you can get our podcast, too, at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Time for our weekly spin through national politics. Sexual harassment allegations result in departures in Washington. John Conyers, a Detroit Democrat. Trent Franks, an Arizona Republican who apparently offered a staff member $5 million to serve as a surrogate to give birth to their child. Then, of course, Al Franken, the Democratic senator from Minnesota. Franken addressed the Senate and also noted President Donald Trump, as well as Alabama Republican Senate candidate Roy Moore.
Today I am announcing that in the coming weeks I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate. I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls' campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
Now, as for Trump, he's all in for Roy Moore, despite the allegations about the Republican candidate from teenaged women. And Trump says he thinks Moore is going to win. Trump has even recorded a robocall for Alabama Republican Roy Moore that'll be playing out ahead of this week's special election. Here's what the president had to say earlier this week.
I think he's going to do very well. We don't want to have a liberal Democrat in Alabama, believe me. We want strong borders. We want stopping crime. We want to have the things that we represent, and we certainly don't want to have a liberal Democrat that's controlled by Nancy Pelosi and controlled by Chuck Schumer. We don't want to have that for Alabama.
But we want to have the things that we represent. Very interesting line here as far as Republicans. And, of course, Republican support for Roy Moore isn't being welcomed by all aspects of the GOP. On CNN, Illinois Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger of Shanahan says he doesn't want a party that supports Roy Moore.
This Roy Moore thing to me is very disappointing for my party. I can't tell Alabama what to do. Mm-hmm. I don't live in Alabama. I'm from Illinois. But, you know, as a Republican, I look at that and say, I think these women's accusations are very credible. I've seen them talk about them. And it's very disappointing for me to see the party getting behind. Look, 52 Senate seats or 51 Senate seats, I mean, really, it's not going to have an appreciable difference. But to be a party that accepts some of the behavior of Roy Moore, I don't want to be that party. And so, look, I'm going to continue to take a stand on it. And if somebody wants to criticize me for that, that's fine. But at the end of my job in Congress, I want to be able to look in the mirror and say I did everything I could with this moment I had. And this is part of that.
Now, Moore hasn't exactly helped his own candidacy. He isn't speaking to local reporters in Alabama. And he did speak to The Guardian in the UK. He offered his belief to a reporter that the United States and its policies could make the country a focus of evil in the modern world, just like Russia.
He said that Russia was the focus of evil in the modern world.
You could say that very well about America, couldn't you?
Do you think?
Well, we promote a lot of bad things, you know?
Like?
Same-sex marriage.
That's the very argument that Vladimir Putin makes.
Well, then maybe Putin is right. Maybe he's more akin to me than I know.
So at a time when you have a president under investigation over alleged Russian collusion, you now have a controversial Republican U.S. Senate candidate in Alabama who says he's perhaps more akin to Vladimir Putin than he ever knew.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. This is your Sunday Spin. More revelations about the Russia investigation by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Issues about post-Trump Tower emails during the campaign between Donald Trump Jr. and Russian connections. And everybody is still wondering what former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn will give up to Mueller. ABC's Cecilia Vega asked White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders if the president might give Flynn a pardon.
Would he consider pardoning him?
I'm not aware of that. That has come up or any process or decision on that front.
So that you haven't talked to him about it, or
no? I haven't asked. I haven't asked the president whether or not he would do that.
Can you see?
I think before we start discussing the pardons for individuals, we should see, you know, what happens in specific cases too.
So is it fair to say it's on the table?
No, I just said I haven't had the conversation with him because I don't feel that it's necessary until, you know, you get further down the road and determine whether or not that's even something needed.
Something needed. A pardon is an item that's needed. Interesting choice of words there. Speaking of choice of words, FBI Director Christopher Wray went before Congress and was asked about the president's tweet that President Trump views the FBI in tatters.
The FBI that I see is tens of thousands of agents and analysts and staff working their tails off to keep Americans safe from the next terrorist attack, gang violence, child predators, spies from Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. The FBI that I see is tens of thousands of brave men and women who are working as hard as they can to keep people that they will never know safe from harm. And the FBI that I see is reflected in folks like the new class of agents that I swore in at Quantico 2 days ago, hard-charging, high-integrity people, people like the hostage rescue team and SWAT teams that we send out into all sorts of danger with almost no notice. The FBI that I see is people, decent people, committed to the highest principles of integrity and professionalism and respect. The FBI that I see is respected and appreciated by our partners in federal, state, and local law enforcement, in the intelligence community, by our foreign counterparts, both law enforcement and national security, in something like 200 countries around the globe. That's the FBI that I see.
That's FBI Director Christopher Wray. Well, joining me now here in the Showcase studio is Democratic State Senator Michael Hastings from Tinley Park. Senator, good to have you in. And I know you're in a, as Sam mentioned in the sportscast, in a bit of a joyful mood.
Rick, it's always good to be here. We had an Illinois son, Jeff Munkin, who's the head coach of Army. He brought Army home the Commander-in-Chief trophy. And our quarterback is a Chicago native. His name is Ahmad Brashaw from Gwendolyn Brooks. Just want to give them a congratulations on their big win yesterday and bringing the trophy home.
And you said the last time that Army beat Navy.
Last time Army beat Navy was last year, and then before that was when I played in 2001, and that's a long time ago.
So, and now back-to-back.
Back-to-back, first time since 95 and 96, and that's part of the reason why I don't have a voice today.
Well understood, well understood. Well, I wanted to have you in on a couple of issues about, basically, it's almost geek issues in some respects, but they're issues that are very far-reaching and have very far-reaching consequences. And I want to start first on the issue of net neutrality, because this is something that the FCC is poised to do away with net neutrality rules this week.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a period of public comment, but it's pretty evident that they're going to go forward with the new leadership at the FCC under the Trump administration to end net neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
I think people have heard the term, but I don't know that they know what it means.
This is a very simple topic, but it's just complex in name. Some people just don't understand technology, but net neutrality is the concept that all traffic on the Internet should be treated equally. Your Internet provider can't suddenly just decide to slow down your YouTube or your Netflix streaming capability. These rules were put into place in 2015. It's been 2 years since those rules have been put into place because of incidents that have sort of altered the way the Internet was used.
Sure, there were providers that were slowing down the speed delivery from certain websites, like YouTube. And frankly, at that time, it was more data-intensive type websites.
Right. So, like, if you watch Netflix, for example, and you use AT&T broadband, AT&T could possibly slow down your streaming capability, or they can charge you more if net neutrality was not in place to watch those movies online or to watch YouTube or to listen to music, so on and so forth. I'm not singling out a single company, but I'm just using one, for example, because in Illinois and across the country, there's so many providers out there that, you know, you just don't want that to happen. You want it to all to be treated equally, and so that your service isn't slowed down.
It's basically that it's a pipeline where everybody has access and everybody can receive.
That's exactly it.
And so by ending net neutrality, one of the issues that the leadership of the FCC, the Republican side of the FCC, cites is that they believe that this will foster competition and innovation.
See, that's an argument that they use. But when you look at broadband providers in Illinois, and the one thing I'm concerned about is that it's very limited in scope. Users in Illinois generally only have access to one broadband provider, or two at most. So those, it would be almost like an independent monopoly in terms of they're the only provider streaming services to a user. So Netflix users in Illinois use one provider, their price could go up from that. And it also crowds out the small businesses, too, that want to provide services. So, for example, a big supplier of goods, whether that's Amazon, Walmart, so on and so forth, they have the money and the resources to pay for better service, while a small mom-and-pop shop out of Tinley Park, Illinois, that wants to sell goods on the Internet won't be able to have the access that an Amazon or a Google would have.
Or get crowded out, potentially.
For sure.
And there's also, and I know, you know, in countries that do not have net neutrality, you basically find yourself with a situation almost similar to cable of a la carte type pricing. And that if you want Netflix to stream properly, a provider could charge you more to access Netflix.
That's spot on the money, Rick. And people these days are paying a lot of money for using the Internet and watching cable TV, and the last thing they want to see is their rates go up. And that's part of the reason why I filed Senate Resolution 1173, is because we want to urge Congress that not to roll back these rules that we put back into place in 2015. That's not what we want. We want people to have equal access to the Internet, equal access to information, and we don't want their prices to go up.
And, you know, there's an argument to be made that it already costs, you know, a pretty penny just for the Internet access, that, you know, at a time when, you know, there's a great belief about universal access to the Internet.
I'm just more concerned over the fact that it's been 2 years since the rules have been put into place and the new administration wants to go ahead and repeal the rules. I mean, the rules were put into place for a reason. There was companies out there that were telling app developers that if you develop an app and you put it onto our platform, we're not going to charge you for it. You know, and is that right? No, I don't think so. I think everyone should be treated equally in terms of getting access to information online. And this would definitely turn that around real quick.
And the FCC rules would prohibit individual states from enacting their own net neutrality laws.
That's true, and that's why it's important for Illinois to urge the federal Congress and the administration not to roll these rules back. We're the fifth largest state in the country. We're one of the world's largest economies. Our voice should be heard, and I don't have a problem speaking our mind collectively as a whole.
You've never had trouble speaking your mind on things, Senator Hastings. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, joined by State Senator Michael Hastings, Democrat from Tinley Park. And Senator, last week, it was, to me, one of the oddest declarations ever made by a sitting politician. Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, who next month will mark 3 years in office, declared that he's not in charge.
So if he's been in charge the last 35, have you been in charge the last three?
I wish I had. We would have our problems fixed. Illinois would be on a great future. We'd have 200,000 more jobs in this state. We would have lower property taxes in this state. We would have term limits in this state if I was in charge. I am not in charge. I'm trying to get to be in charge.
And, of course, the he in 35 years was a reference at the beginning to House Speaker Michael Madigan. Senator, I've never heard a governor say I'm not in charge.
Rick, I've never heard a governor say I'm not in charge either. And I thought about this for a while, and I'm thinking to myself, can you imagine stepping in front of a platoon of soldiers right about to go to Iraq, and then I'm going to tell them I'm not in charge? They're going to look at me like, oh, crap, we're in some trouble here. The governor's in charge of one of the largest states in the country, and for him just to say that, it makes me wonder what in the heck he's been doing for the last 3 years. And it also makes me concerned on if he's not in charge now, then and if he continues to fail, is he going to be in charge ever?
Well, and I mean, let's face it. I mean, House Speaker Michael Madigan has been regarded as perhaps the most powerful politician in Illinois. But that was also something that was known kind of going into when he first got elected. And if, as I said before, if there's one thing I think he has been successful on, it's in using his political and cash resources to make Mike Madigan the boogeyman.
The governor has unbelievable resources. And I can tell you what, if I had his resources, I wouldn't be saying I'm not in charge by any means. The governor has had ample opportunity over the last 3 years to move his agenda along and work with Democrats. There's a lot of Democrats out there that do have similar views to him in certain areas. They do. He's just failed to capitalize on those moments where he was able to capitalize on. And now that he's 3/4 of the way into his term and he's up for re-election, you know, saying I'm not in charge isn't a good way to get re-elected, that's for sure. But you know, he's just failed to work with people, and he really doesn't know the legislative body, period. He says he does, but I've seen two sitting governors more than I've seen, or two former sitting governors, I should say, more than I've seen this governor in the Capitol. And that's a shame.
But he always says that while he talks to Democrats privately, doesn't say who they are, but that, you know, they're right with him on these things.
No, that's not true. I'll just leave it at that, Rick. He doesn't know where some legislators come from. He doesn't know what their districts are about. He asked legislators for things at certain points in time early in his administration that I thought were ill-advised, and whoever was counseling him on him on whatever he was trying to do was dead wrong. And I wish him well in the upcoming election. However, you know, saying I'm not in charge is a failure of leadership in my mind. And never, ever in my military training or corporate training, when you're put in a position of power and responsibility, you take responsibility for your actions and move forward.
I want to talk to you about the issue of cross-check, the interstate cross-check system. This is one of two systems that the state of Illinois is involved with that's aimed at ferreting out duplicate voter registrations across state lines. There's also a system that's known as ERIC. It's a system that Illinois pays to be a part of. Cross-check has been very controversial. There's been evidence presented that they're using basically 20-year-old technology for security purposes, and that it can be easily hacked. And there's a question about the security of voter data. And one of the more troubling aspects of that is that unlike ERIC, which is a more reliable, everybody acknowledges more reliable, more secure system, cross-check involves the use of Social Security numbers, the final four digits of Social Security numbers. And accessing those can be a severe security breach. There's legislation, the State Board of Elections tied on a 4-4 vote about getting out of cross-check, which means we're still in it. I had the chairman of the board, Bill Cadigan, on the show explaining that in part there's fears of the federal mandate of having, of conducting these voter verification things required by the Voting Rights Act. But at the same time, there's that versus voter data security legislation to get Illinois out of cross-check.
Mm-hmm. I think, first and foremost, a lot of people think this is about who won the presidential election. It's not. This is about protecting people's information. I'm the chairman of the state subcommittee on cybersecurity, and the one thing that we've learned was, you know, our system through the Illinois State Board of Elections had a flaw in it, and it allowed for tens of thousands of names to be compromised. That's a problem. I think it's important that we secure that data. Cross-check is a system that double checks voter registration from one state to the next state, and it eliminates duplicative voter registration files. One thing we found is that we share information with other states. It's not secure when we send it back and forth. The servers that we send it to are in Arkansas. It gets transferred to Kansas. There's so many different opportunities for somebody to intercept all this information. No one's really had brought it to light until now because Illinois was one of two states that was hacked in the recent election. Some people don't want to believe that. That's fine. It's proven by the FBI through their investigations that we were hacked, for those people who think I'm a conspiracy theorist out there. But the problem is that through this cross-check system, not only do other states remove voters from their voter file, it creates a voter suppression situation. And I think the most concerning thing is that we're in another system that is so it's very, very secure. I won't say it's so secure that it can't be hacked, because I think everything can be hacked. But the ERIC system itself is a far superior program than cross-check. But for some reason, the State Board of Elections just fails to realize the security concerns here. And it's the board. It's not the staff. The staff of the Illinois State Board of Elections are great staff. They have a fully competent, great staff there. It's for some reason the board just fails to realize that this is not the system to be in.
Well, one thing that they do point out is that Eric is among Illinois' neighboring states. Only Wisconsin is a member of Eric, and that, you know, with movement of people, Indiana, other border states, that it, you wouldn't have that verification aspect.
See, that's not necessarily true. I mean, obviously, some of the states aren't involved in Eric, and that's fine because some of them choose not to pay for it, but that doesn't prevent the state of Illinois from entering into intergovernmental agreements with other states to share election data. So, I mean, that's a workaround to the system. And eventually, I think with security, I think these other states are going to find out that when you're sending voter information, not encrypted, not secure, and once they get hacked and they lose 50,000 names, and then their voters start rising up and asking, where's my information going? Then they'll realize the need to transfer themselves into a more secure system. But, you know, even in the, when we did the testimony in the State Board of Elections, even the staff from the State Board of Elections said, listen, Eric is a far superior and a far secure system. I don't really know why we're not just in that one alone. And they acknowledge the fact that CrossCheck was a far inferior and a less secure system, but the votes on the board still, you know, they were what they were, and you got to deal with it.
And you mentioned about issue of voter suppression. Of course, one of the issues, and there's a federal lawsuit against the state of Indiana, which has decided to use CrossCheck data as a pure basis for striking people from the rolls rather than going through a procedural checklist of, you know, as done in Illinois, of you know, cleaning up the rolls. They send out a letter if it comes back, addressee unknown, you know, that tells you something right there. This just uses the data from CrossCheck where there's questions of reliability.
See, the one thing with Illinois and that I'm proud about is, and there's, you know, some people don't have a lot of things to say about Illinois that they're proud about, but I am actually proud of the State Board of Elections in terms of how they verify and how they eliminate somebody from the voter roll. It's a very complicated process that requires a lot of checks and balances. We have that. Now you go to Indiana, for example, and you got Michael Smith and you got 50 Michael Smiths or Melissa Ramirez, which is a very common name, or, you know, so on. So Jerome Brown is another familiar name. Indiana may strike those names automatically. They may not have the same process that Illinois has, and there's a lot of false positives on CrossCheck. You know, sometimes they say this is a duplicative voter registration when it really isn't, and then some other state may strike it from the rolls. That's wrong.
And so we'll see where this legislation goes when the General Assembly returns in January.
Senator Kwame Raoul, and myself and Senator Bill Cunningham from the South Suburbs have really been involved in this. And I can just tell you that we don't want to do anything to hinder the electoral process in Illinois. We don't want to hurt people. We want to make sure people's information is secure. I think this bill, once it's passed, the governor's going to have a choice. Do you want to secure people's information or don't you? You decide.
And we'll leave it right there.
Thanks, Rick.
Senator Michael Hastings, Democrat from Tinley Park, thanks so much for joining me here this morning.
It's always great to be here. Go Army, beat Navy.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. Congress approved a temporary continuing resolution to keep government functioning until December 22nd, but President Trump warned that there could still be a government shutdown, and he blamed that on Democrats over their efforts to secure a renewal of the DACA program for immigrants.
It could happen. The Democrats are really looking at something that is very dangerous for our country. They are looking at shutting down. They want to have illegal immigrants, in many cases, people that we don't want in our country. They want to have illegal immigrants pouring into our country, bringing with them crime, tremendous amounts of crime. We don't want to have that. We want to have a great, beautiful, crime-free country. And we want people coming into our country, but we want them to come on our basis. And that's why we're being so careful with our process and our screening. And as you know, we had a tremendous victory the other day in the Supreme Court with the ban. Got quite a bit of attention, probably not as much of attention as it deserved. But we had tremendous, that was a tremendous victory for this country. Not a victory for me, it was a victory for our country.
And that's President Trump. Joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower is 35th Ward Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa. He is a candidate for the 4th Congressional District Democratic nomination, the seat now held by retiring United States Representative Luis Gutierrez. Alderman, thank you so much
for
joining
me. How are you?
So you just heard the president's words regarding immigration. Apparently the other night, I didn't want to replay it because it was playing the kind of the same argument again about what the heck is going on in Chicago and using that as an issue not only about gun control, which once again he said Chicago had the strictest gun laws in the nation, which we've has been debunked universally about that, but also this issue about immigration and safety issues.
Look, it's the oldest trick in the book, divide and conquer. And the reality is that immigrants commit less crimes on average than U.S. citizens. If you're risking your life to cross the border, if you are fighting tooth and nail to better yourself and make the journey to the United States, you think you're going to come here to commit crimes and risk jail time? Immigrants come here to work. They come here to pursue the American dream. And I'm very upset that our president continues to use bigoted language, hateful language, when in reality, what the president needs to be focusing on is making sure that the American dream exists for everyone in the United States, rather than trying to blame a vulnerable few who are working very hard to make our country work and make our country a better place.
Now, as I said, you're running for the seat that's now held by Congressman Gutierrez, who we know is perhaps the most outspoken person when it comes to issues about immigrants, immigration law changes, and combating the Trump presidency and administration. How much of running for this is really running against Donald Trump?
Well, Rick, there's no question Congressman Luis Gutierrez is a principled progressive who is our national champion when it comes to immigration issues. I'm very proud to have been able to work for him, for the community, for 3 years. And primarily what I worked on was deportation cases. So people would call from Utah, people would call from across the United States, people would walk into the office from throughout the 4th Congressional District and say, I'm facing deportation. And one of the things we need to recognize is that President Barack Obama actually deported the most people out of any U.S. president in U.S. history. And President Trump is actually lagging behind the pace of deportations that we saw under President Obama throughout his 8 years, over 2 million deportations.
And that was a chafing issue for a number of Democrats.
Precisely. But what we have seen Donald Trump is an intensification of the hatred, the bigotry, and a president seeking to divide and conquer the people that he is supposed to serve. And that is egregious. That is disgusting. And what we've also seen as well is the fear that that creates in the immigrant community. So the deportation regime that existed under Barack Obama, it's now President Trump's deportation regime. And the fight continues to stop deportations to make sure that we are keeping families together. And obviously, we've already seen how the president has acted to undo one of the benchmark hallmark things that President Obama achieved, which is providing protection from deportation and a work permit for some undocumented youth, which many of us know as Dreamers based upon the Build a Dream Act. We need to make sure that ultimately we are stopping deportations and we are finding a way to dignify the 11 million people in the United States, the vast majority of which have lived here for more than 10 years, who have to live in the shadows and operate from fear because they fear deportation.
When this continuing resolution was approved in Congress, there were a number, I noticed on social media, there were a number of concerns among progressive Democrats about the fact that Senator Durbin, Senator Duckworth voted for this continuing resolution without the provisions to restore DACA. And in fact, I spoke to both of them the other day on Friday, where they said that we voted for a clean continuing resolution without any attachments, no Republican attachments, no Democratic attachments, that gets us to December 22nd. And that's the key date when it comes to having in their motivation to
restore DACA. Yeah, right before Christmas when no one's paying attention.
Well, I mean, mm-hmm. are you satisfied with that answer?
No, not at all. This is the reality. Republicans are not afraid to play hardball. They've shown this time and time again, and that's why they continue to win. That's why we've seen the center of gravity move towards the right, move towards reactionary movements, while we as progressives continue to lose elected offices, while we continue to lose very important fights that we need to win for the people that are electing us to fight for working and regular people. That is why I'm running for Congress, because we need to more boldly and more vigorously oppose Donald Trump. And the reality is that this president has repealed protections from deportation for immigrant youth who were brought here as children, who have been able to benefit from a work permit, and then have been able to contribute in the capacity that they're able to contribute to making our nation greater. Our president repealed those protections from them. The U.S. government now has their personal information, and God forbid that President Trump now decides to begin deporting those individuals or going after their families. So this needs to be a national priority to ensure that we get this right and that we fix the situation that we put these children in, right?
So you don't believe by the end of the year that there will be a resolution to DACA, which expires?
Well, I don't think
March.
A single Democrat should have voted for this continuing resolution without a solution for DACA. We have to begin to play hardball. We have to play in the same way that the Republicans have been playing and winning for years. People, Democrats, want stronger, bolder, progressive leadership. And I think that's why right now individuals are talking about how can we move the center of gravity in Washington, D.C. to the left, because it's too far right now, and we're not getting the policies that we know our communities need. For example, a permanent solution for our undocumented youth.
We're speaking with 35th Ward Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa. He's a candidate for the Democratic nomination in the 4th Congressional District. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Tree Time decorated All-State Showcase Studio. Beautiful Christmas decorations. I'm here with Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa from the 35th Ward, 4th Congressional District Democratic candidate, who asked if I actually put up the decorations this morning.
That's right. They're beautiful.
I'll readily admit I did not. But, yeah, we want to thank all the folks at Tree Time. You, before we went to the break, you were talking about Republican successes and the need, in your words, for a stronger, bolder, progressive Democratic vision to match that.
Mm-hmm.
What is a Democrat these days?
That's a great question. You know, I feel like there are so many Democrats, which I would call corporate Democrats, and they're essentially the Republicans from the 1970s and the 1980s. If you look at the policies that the Republican Party was putting forward in the 70s and the 80s, essentially, that's what corporate Democrats are putting forward today. In the city of Chicago, of course, where I'm an alderman, we have a 50-member city council, of which 49 are Democrats. We have a mayor who is a leading Democratic national figure. But when you look at the policies that the council and the mayor have put forward, they benefit Wall Street. They benefit the few at the expense of the many. And there's, you know, sweetheart contracts, there's crony capitalism going on. So in many ways, people are fed up of seeing Democrats act the same way as Republicans. Now, there's important distinctions. For example, when it comes to protecting women's rights to choose, when it comes to protecting the LGBT community, when it comes to fighting for immigrant rights. But I think on the economic side, we've seen a convergence of both the Democrat and Republican Party in pushing forward policies that benefit Wall Street at the expense of Main Street. And that's why people are fed up. They want to return back to the days of FDR. They want to return back to the days when the Democratic Party said, we are going to eradicate poverty. We are going to uplift everyone because we're one nation and we can come together and accomplish great things.
Well, and there's a great argument to be made that the Trump victory was an economic decision by an angry electorate that still uncertain of their job prospects, of how any increase in pay or what their future is going to hold as we go into an era of increased automation and globalization.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And just that kind of uncertainty that exists. But, you know, when you look at a Chuck Schumer and a Nancy Pelosi, I mean, these are, you know, this is the establishment Democrat versus the progressive Democrat. And we're seeing this play out in a variety of fronts. We're seeing it in our you know, race for governor on the Democratic nomination.
That's right.
We're seeing it around the country. But on issues, on a lot of fundamental issues, last week I had Commissioner Jesus Chuy Garcia on, who's also running. But on those kind of fundamental issues like $15 an hour and those kinds of things, you guys are all in line. You're both in line together.
Well, absolutely. There's no question that the kitchen counter issues that are impacting American lives, for example, the need for a $15 living wage today. There's nowhere in this country where if you are earning the federal minimum wage, you are able to keep your head above water. It is a poverty wage in every single town in the U.S. It is ridiculous that we have not raised it. I'm going to fight to make sure that we raise it to a $15 living wage now. Not in 2019, not in 2020, not in 2022. We need that raised now for America's workers because they're working hard. They deserve to have a dignified life, to be able to not live paycheck to paycheck. When it comes to fighting for Medicare for All, absolutely. We agree 150%. I think the difference here is the leadership that I've shown and the track record I've shown in the Chicago City Council. And that is when the establishment has told me to back down. That is when I've been told that I need to moderate my position. What I do is I double down and fight more boldly and strongly for our progressive ideals. And that's why I was one of 50 to vote no on the police and fire academy. When Mayor Rahm Emanuel said he wanted to spend $95 million to build a new police and fire academy, and by the way, still hasn't told us how he's going to pay for it, right? I said, look, let me reach out to the Movement for Black Lives and let me ask them what they think about this issue. And what the Movement for Black Lives, what organizations like Black Lives Matter Chicago told me was, we want you to vote no. Because if we're going to invest $95 million on the west side of Chicago, it should go to our schools, it should go to mental health clinics, it should go to jobs and community programs. It shouldn't go to a new swimming pool and a shooting range for police officers. And I voted no. So the leadership that I've exemplified is one that is constantly tied to grassroots movements, that constantly looks to those on the left that are organizing and actively fighting for social and economic justice for all people. And that's the type of leadership I'm going to take to Washington, D.C., where you can trust that I'm going to remain tied to movements for social and economic justice. So when I'm fighting for immigration reform, you better believe I'm going to be talking to undocumented Americans and asking them, what do you need from me? What are the bold stances that you need for a congressman like myself to take at this moment to move the conversation to the left and to create the space so that we can see those progressive wins?
Now, ostensibly, were you to win the election, that you would...
Oh, we're going to win, Rick.
Okay, well, as a reporter,
That's right.
Keeping this open. Mm-hmm. But you would enter as a minority party, and you'd also be entering as a freshman.
Oh, yeah, I'd have the closet office. I'd be 435 out of 435. But Congress is all about seniority, and it's about building those relationships over time. And it's no secret, I'm 28. I'll be 29 when Election Day rolls around. But 10 years from now, I'll be 39. And my hope, my commitment, my promise to the people of Illinois in the 4th Congressional District is that you will have the boldest, strongest, progressive leader in the nation who then has 10 years of seniority. And that will work nationally and locally to strengthen the Democratic Party and begin to win back those seats.
Since you're talking a little bit ahead, but
we truly, always got to plan ahead.
No, but truly, you know, we're looking at the possibility of Illinois after the next census losing a congressional seat, if not maybe two. And there's some talk about whether this fourth district, as it exists, which is a unique creature. But it's obviously withheld or stood up to legal challenge.
It was created by court order.
Correct. And under the Voter Rights Act. But there is some question about whether, if Illinois is forced to lose a seat, whether that solid, seat design for, the diverse, geographically diverse Latino populations can survive under with a new map.
That's right. Most Illinois Democrats expect that we will lose a congressional seat. The question is, will we gain a Latino seat? There are over a million people of Latino heritage throughout Chicagoland and in Cook County. And there's enough population there and enough argument there that the time has come, given that it's now been a quarter of a century, right, since Congressman Luis Gutierrez became the first congressman to be elected out of the 4th Congressional District, to create two Latino seats. And there's a possibility that one could be created anchored around the southwest side, taking in suburbs like Cicero and Berwyn, and then another one could be created on the northwest side, taking in neighborhoods like the ones I represent and further west into Melrose Park.
You kind of touched on this with establishment Democrats and things. I wanted to get your reaction to this whole issue that we saw unfold in recent days regarding the Chicago Public Schools and Forrest Claypool's abrupt departure after the Inspector General's report, which accused him of basically lying to the Inspector General, as well as perhaps even falsifying billing documents. This turmoil at CPS, I guess if you care about Chicago Public Schools, it's probably good that the legislature and the governor finally agreed on that school funding formula change, because I can't imagine anybody going to Springfield in this atmosphere right now trying to get help for Chicago Public Schools.
You know, our Chicago Public Schools need to be the number one priority for every single elected official in the Chicagoland area. Our children are our future, and it is egregious that we have children in classrooms without air conditioning, that we have children in schools without librarians, without a library, that we have too many students per teacher. The ratio is totally out of whack. It needs to be smaller. And that means that we need to fully fund our public schools. The state of Illinois has failed to meet its obligation to provide the majority of funding to our public schools. And unfortunately, absent new revenue sources, for example, like a progressive graduated income tax, we are entirely too reliant on property taxes. And so we've seen how that's played out, right? In very affluent suburbs in the North Shore, they have beautiful facilities. They're spending a lot of money per pupil. But in the city of Chicago, we are hit twice in that, one, our students are in schools that are not funded in the way that they should be. But two, we continue to see rising property taxes, and that's hurting working families who, quite frankly, they're not getting more money. Their property tax is going up $600. Where are they going to get that money from? So we need to come together, and what I've done in the Chicago City Council is I've advocated for emptying out the TIF funds. Of course, tax increment financing siphons off a lot of property tax dollars in many instances around the downtown area and the Central Business District, siphons off upwards of $1 billion into a fund that in many cases then goes to connected developers and connected campaign contributors. So I've been a strong, bold advocate saying that money needs to go back to our schools. We need to surplus that money and fully fund our public schools.
That's Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa, a congressional candidate in the 4th Congressional District for the Democratic nomination. Thank you so much for joining me this
morning. Thank you so much, Rick.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio and Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Sun is out now, just out on the WGN Storm Center patio, and still a little nippy out there. So, and Tuesday, I saw the forecast for Tuesday. That's not going to be a picnic. Highs in the low 20s, plus very windy, and the wind chill actually will be creating single-digit type feel on Tuesday. So there's something to look forward to, although bright spot next weekend. Temperatures look like they'll be in the 40s on Saturday and Sunday. Still didn't stop me from grilling last night. Fired up the grill and threw a couple of steaks on the grill last night. That was a nice way to go in anticipation of tonight's Blackhawks game against the Coyotes. And thankfully, we can now we've got the 5-game losing streak put aside after beating Buffalo in overtime 3-2, and I'm still trying to figure out why it took overtime to beat Buffalo. But hopefully tonight at the United Center, things will be going well. John and Troy, of course, will have all the action right here on WGN 720. You know, last week the president announced that the U.S. at some point, and perhaps far in the future, would move its embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. At some point. But instead of discussing that move, much of the discussion that took place was about Trump's announcement and how his speaking pattern took an odd turn.
Let us rethink old assumptions and open our hearts and minds to possible and possibilities. And finally, I ask the leaders of the region, political and religious, Israeli and Palestinian, Jewish and Christian and Muslim, to join us in the noble quest for lasting peace. Thank you. God bless you. God bless Israel. God bless the Palestinians. And God bless the United States. Thank you very much.
The United States. The White House announced that the president at the first of the year will undergo his annual medical screening, but assured everybody that no, there were no problems and there was no polygrip involved in this. Well, joining me now is my good friend and Tribune colleague, Hal Dardick. Hal covers county and city politics as part of the political team at the Chicago Tribune. And I always talk, Hal, that I consider Dean Richards the busiest man in show business, but last week you had to be the busiest man in show business. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Oh, my pleasure, okay. It was quite a week. I recovered yesterday. I slept in.
Very good. Very good. Well, I kind of closed the conversation with Alderman Ramirez Rosa about the issue of Forrest Claypool's abrupt departure. And I think I told you on Friday that now Forrest Claypool shares with issue of going to his own funeral, basically with that Friday performance. I mean, it was a very unusual press conference announcing his departure.
Oh, it really was. Instead of usually when someone resigns, they put out a statement, especially when they've resigned under a cloud like this, where there was an ethics investigation that recommended that he be fired for allegedly covering up his decisions that violated the Chicago Public Schools ethics code. But instead, the mayor stood up and sang his accolades for us, sort of praised himself and made very little reference to the fact that he was leaving under a cloud, saying that, you know, he made mistakes and it was time for him to move on, but he didn't, you know, elucidate on those mistakes. It was a sign, I think, of the friendship that these two men hold. The Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Forrest Claypool go back to 1980 to a congressional campaign where they first worked together, and they were Forrest was in law school, the mayor was still in college, and you know, over the years they've both been friends and associates with David Axelrod and Richard Daley, and it was also, you know, to be fair, Forrest has always been viewed as someone who's an amazing sort of technocrat, if you will. He was brought in to situations at the Chicago Park District, at City Hall, at the CTA, to do very difficult tasks and accomplish them efficiently, even if he ruffled some feathers, particularly among union members, because he was prone to cutting jobs in all those places. But, you know, so he does deserve, you know, some praise for his 30 years of public service. But it was really odd because, you know, here you've got perhaps one of the most important things to residents of the city of Chicago Public Schools, and Forrest had done something. He brought in an attorney who had a conflict because he was still getting paid by the firm he was overseeing, and Forrest tried to alter a bill to make that less obvious. It wouldn't, quote, go public, according to the Inspector General, and he allegedly lied about it when the Inspector General interviewed him, and so he brought sort of a level of discredit on something that the residents of the city cared deeply about, and yet they were singing his praise. So it was a very odd moment.
Well, and then on top of that, the fact that when, you know, was told that there was a, you know, very serious ethical issue here involved, that then he decided to go basically lawyer shopping.
Well, he did. Yeah, right. There were four in-house attorneys at Chicago Public Schools that said Ronald Marmer, the general counsel, the top attorney for Chicago Public Schools, that Forrest had hired, over the objections of a couple of board members who saw this conflict perhaps brewing. And he said that, you know, he cannot oversee Jenner and Block, the firm, the major firm that he came from, in a civil rights case filed by Chicago Public Schools in an effort to allege that the funding from the state was too little and discriminatory, because he was getting paid $1 million in five $200,000 increments, over yearly increments, because he had a business interest in that firm. And there were four in-house attorneys, and then Forrest went and he sought opinions from two more attorneys. One was the labor attorney for Chicago Public Schools. The other was a former general counsel for Chicago Public. They both said, oh, wait, you know, that's a conflict, Forrest, you can't do it. And then Forrest went to a seventh attorney. And that seventh attorney with whom he'd had, who had been a supporter of his politically, said, oh, it's okay. And then that's the opinion that Forrest presented to the school board. So that was sort of misleading. You know, you've got
well, and as the Inspector General's report pointed out, there was nothing that prevented Forrest Claypool from bringing the matter before the board and seeking a waiver.
That's the tremendous irony here, is that he could have either removed Marmer from supervision, or if he thought that he had this, quote, all-star team that he apparently told the Inspector General he had, could have gone before the board and said that Mr. Marmer is not profiting directly from this particular contract, so it doesn't violate the intent of the ethics code, which is to prevent profiteering, which was Forrest's position all along. And then the board could have voted to give him an exemption, which they almost certainly would have done in this case. But the reason, according to the Inspector General's report, that Forrest did not do that was because he didn't want it to, quote, go public, because he would have certainly got a couple of days, a day or two of bad publicity. Oh, he hired his old buddy, he's letting his old firm oversee this suit that, you know, and getting paid a good amount of money for it. But instead, he decided to not bring it to the board because he didn't want those couple days of bad publicity, and it ended up being a career-ending move, because he was trying to avoid a bad story or two.
Seems like often it's always about the cover-up.
The cover-up, even the Inspector General said that it was, the cover-up was more serious than the underlying offense here.
We're speaking with Hal Dardick, my colleague from the political team at the Chicago Tribune. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. If you heard that promo for tonight's Blackhawks game, actually they're bringing the tumbleweeds from Glendale over to the United Center. Blackhawks are home tonight against the Coyotes, and we're looking forward to a big victory, as well as John and Troy's broadcast of the game tonight. And you can catch it right here on WGN. Joining me on the phone is my good friend Hal Dardick, colleague of the political team at the Chicago Tribune. Hal, I want to shift gears and talk about the candidate petition filing, as well as, frankly, the whole issue of our front page story in the Chicago Tribune today, issue of the property tax system, the latest of the investigation into Cook County property taxes, and the man at the center of that, Joe Berrios. And Berrios is facing a primary challenge. Is it significant?
I think it is. He's facing actually two candidates. One was kind of a surprise, which was part of my busy week this week. But Fritz Kagi, who is an asset manager from Oak Park and has a lot of support from sort of independent Democrats across the county, some of whom have you know, organizations that can turn out some vote, and it's really interesting because it's sort of at least for regular Democrats, it almost is an act of treason to oppose Berrios, considering he's chairman of the Democratic Party, a close ally of Michael Madigan, House Speaker, and chairman of the state Democratic Party, of course. And but interestingly enough, there's a press release out this morning. There's going to be an announcement later today that two congressmen, you're going to have Danny Davis and Robin Kelly endorse Fritz Kagi, which I think is an acknowledgement of the impact that the story that my colleague Jason Grotto, first for the Tribune, now for ProPublica and the Tribune, has exposed in a system of assessments, the property tax assessments, that is unfair and favors, in many cases, wealthy folks over poorer or less affluent folks in neighborhoods of color often. And what happens is they get assessments that are lower, so they pay less than their fair share in property taxes, and the affluent communities and the poorer folks end up making up the difference, so they're paying more in property taxes, making what is a 20th or a 19th century agrarian system of taxation.
That's my line. That's my line. You can't use that.
Sorry to steal that from you. But, But Mr. Kagi's got some money of his own. He's put some into the race. We'll see what other kind of contributions he gets moving forward, because it'll take a lot of money to take on Barris, who of course gets, and this is part of Jason's work, contributions from lawyers that practice, that do property tax appeals before the assessor's office. So he gets a lot of money from those folks, which some people think is a conflict of interest. And, of course, one of the gubernatorial candidates, Chris Kennedy, has tried to highlight that as part of his campaign. So you have a lot of pushback against Joe Barris. There's also, and I need to mention this, a property tax consultant, Andrea Rala, who joined the race, and everyone's not quite sure, you know, why she's in at the last moment, and we'll wait to see whether she survives any petition challenge and stays in the race and on the ballot.
But it is kind of interesting, as you point out, this kind of how Berrios, in some respects, is becoming a target from within the ranks of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. I find it interesting that this morning that we get news that Robin Kelly's going to endorse Kagi, because she, of course, was an ally of Tony Preckwinkle, who's also got a primary challenge. And Preckwinkle and Berrios are longtime friends and allies in the Democratic Party. So, yeah, it is interesting. I think it's going to be a real race. I think it'll be more of a race, perhaps. Of course, you know, one never knows. It's still early, and the primary's in March. But then former Alderman Bob Fioretti taking on County Board President Tony Preckwinkle.
And a very good segue, Hal. You should come in here on Sunday mornings. I'm all for it. No, but I mean, but seriously, you know, and to me, you know, people were wondering about, you know, who's going to take on Tony Preckwinkle, given the fact that, you know, 2 years ago, that it would be perhaps unthinkable in a Democratic primary. But because of the fizz of the ill-fated and now repealed soda pop tax, the circumstances surrounding that, you know, made her politically, I thought, very politically vulnerable. But yet, there wasn't, other than, you know, really Fioretti, there wasn't a big outpouring of people to take her on.
No, some people were anticipating, especially because people figured that the beverage industry, which fueled the campaign that brought the repeal, of the pop tax, would put some money behind a formidable candidate if they wanted to take on Tony Preckwinkle. But you have an alderman who placed pretty low in the mayoral last mayoral contest and couldn't win a state Senate seat, running against her, trying to make, you know, a comeback bid. And I don't completely discount him, because you're right. I think Preckwinkle is somewhat vulnerable, if not a lot vulnerable, because his pop tax was just so widely despised, because there were strong forces behind it and people that might be willing to get behind someone else. We'll see. Bob Fioretti did get a contribution from 7-Eleven recently, and forget the amount, but it was a fair amount of money, which is interesting, because those are that's of course part of the anti pop tax forces. But you know, it's going to take a lot to be Tony Preckwinkle, not just because she's a party regular and because she has the ability to raise lots of money, but because outside of this pop tax and perhaps the sales tax increase, things that voters aren't real crazy about, she is viewed as a no-nonsense overseer of county government who's championed reform in the criminal justice system, and who has, you know, reduced the size of the county workforce and has strengthened the health system. So, you know, that's why I see almost Barrios being more vulnerable to Kagi, and not just because of the assessment thing, which, you know, is so arcane, and yet people have seemed to be attuned to it now. But because of nepotism in his office, in the image of the old school patronage supporting poll.
All good things to watch if you're a political watcher, particularly in Cook County. Hal Dardick, thank you so much, as always, for joining us this morning. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Thanks for having me, Rick.